Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Pleased to have you back with me. Pleased to be back with you. Not only that, but I'm glad we're all back together again as we get a chance to resume our discussion, our look into not the future so much as the present, what's happening right now when it comes to recycling in communities of color. Green America is letting us know that there are some pretty bad things happening when it comes to recycling and communities of color. Just as we have problems with regards to, well, trash sites and incinerators in particular, and where they're placed and the damage, the harm that they cause people of color, even something as good as recycling is something that is done in such a way that it causes problems for communities of color. A lot of having to do with where the people choose to place these sites. Of course, with them being as harmful as they are, a lot of times the choice is made to put them as close to communities of color and to low-income communities as much as possible and keep them away from upper-class communities and away from white communities. It's a shame that we don't just spread this out and make it equitable. It's not a good thing to have this stuff in places where it will harm anyone. But if it's got to harm anyone, let's make it so that no one unfairly bears the burden of having that harmful stuff placed by them. Some of you may recall, if you were able to be with me when we talked about this before, when we began this discussion about recycling in communities of color, that one of the problems is that the companies don't always truly separate that which can be recycled from that which cannot be recycled and is just trashed. And both that which is to be recycled and that which is obviously just trash ends up going to the same place to be burned up, incinerated with that pollutant, the pollutants put into the air, and often polluting the air that is right there in the neighborhoods of color. Listen to this song by Joe Walsh just before we go any further with this conversation. We'll hear some more of that song, but wow. You say that part of the problem is we have people being dishonest. All right, New York City residents and visitors produce over 20,000 tons. This is just the city now, not the state. New York City residents and visitors produce over 20,000 tons of solid waste every single day, according to the New York City Environmental Justice Alliance. About 75% of that solid waste is processed in just a handful of communities. 75% of 20,000 tons of solid waste every single day being processed in Southeast Queens, South Bronx, North Brooklyn. And the resulting concentration of waste transfer stations and MRFs has been making people in those neighborhoods sick, literally, especially in the summertime when these facilities aren't being closed properly. Then people live and breathe garbage. Some of the waste hauling trucks aren't sealed, so trash flies off during transport, literally in people's backyards. Making the pollution problem even worse is that the trucks that carry the trash and the recyclables to and from the facilities. They note that the commercial waste haulers in particular tend to be very inefficient about their routes. And so you have these huge diesel trucks that chug pollution into the streets, traveling an unnecessary amount of miles in these three main communities. It's not a matter of luxury. The issue is, can my child breathe? Can I breathe? Can we have a healthy and happy family here in the places that we have to live? Due in part to the number of garbage and recycling trucks that rumble in and out of the South Bronx, a 2013 University of New York study found the area to have one of the highest asthma rates in the entire U.S. Priya Mogunkar, who is a policy organizer with the New York City EJA, Environmental Justice Alliance, says that the extra truck traffic also contributes to safety concerns. With over 250 carters competing to pick up enough waste to make a profit, drivers are often pressured by their bosses to speed, to cut corners, and to ignore traffic signals. That puts pedestrians at risk on the roads, and it's also really unfair to the workers themselves, who are largely people of color, undocumented, and formerly incarcerated people, and who often work 12 to 14-hour shifts. Thanks to activist-led initiatives, municipalities across the country are waking up to the fact that there are ways to recycle that don't put an undue burden on one neighborhood over another. The Texas Campaign for the Environment, the TCE, the Texas Campaign for the Environment, is pushing for the state to embrace true zero waste. No dirty MRFs, no incinerators. And as a reminder, because I know it's been a while since we discussed this, MRFs. When we talk about MRFs, we're talking about materials recovery facility, a materials recovery facility that is for the recyclables. And then the MRFs, or the materials recovery facilities, can be broken down into either clean materials recovery facilities, MRFs, or dirty MRFs. The clean ones receive only recycled items that were recycled before pickup. The family, the household, separated the recyclable materials from the trash, put them in separate containers, and the company that has the people go out and pick it up keeps them separated. So recyclables go to the MRFs, and the trash goes to incinerator someplace to be either planted in the ground or burned up. The dirty MRFs, though, are the ones where the recyclable materials were not separated by the households, the individuals, before being picked up. The recyclables and the trash mixed together. And very often, bad news is, they stay together. They stay mixed up. And so the company that receives these mixtures of trash and recyclables just burns it all. And that's why they call it a dirty MRF. They don't separate the recyclables. They just keep all the recyclables and trash together and burn it all together. So again, the Texas Campaign for the Environment, or TCE, wants the state to embrace true zero waste, where they won't have any dirty MRFs or incinerators. Austin and Dallas now aim to divert 90% of their trash from landfills and incinerators by 2020. That's a pretty nice goal, 90%. San Antonio is planning to divert 60% by 2025. San Antonio and Austin have mandatory recycling and municipal curbside composting already in place, and Dallas is working towards both. TCE is pushing for Houston to adopt a zero-waste plan. For the people who make environmental and industrial decisions, communities of color, regardless of their class status, have been considered to be throwaway communities. Therefore, their land is most often used for garbage dumps, waste transfer stations, incinerators, dirty materials recovery facilities, and other waste disposal infrastructure. Isn't it interesting that the clean MRFs, the clean materials recovery facilities that handle only recyclables, are rarely, if ever, placed next to the communities of color? The dirty MRFs are located next to the communities of color. Dr. Bullard, TCE, and their allies have fought off one bin for all so far. Though the plan could come back, the city just signed a 2-year curbside recycling contract that has stalled the dirty MRF. New York City EJA and its allies have been uniting their efforts around the Transform, Don't Trash New York City campaign, advocating for a cleaner, healthier waste system in New York City. In particular, they're calling for the city to award commercial waste hauling contracts to companies that have the highest environmental standards, worker safety and health standards, and worker salaries. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm curious. Do you think that humans are intelligent enough to come up with a way to dispose of our trash and do much less harm to our earth than we've been doing? I'm not just asking that. I really want to know, what do you think? Do you think that we have the intelligence, or do you think we lack the intelligence to come up with much safer, healthier ways to dispose of our trash? Now, it's a given that we're intelligent enough to stop placing the burden of living with all this trash on one community. We can spread that out evenly and should spread it out evenly. But are we intelligent enough to come up with better ways to handle this trash? In 2006, New York City EJA and other organizations worked closely with then Mayor Bloomberg's office to develop a 20-year citywide waste disposal policy that for the first time relied on environmental justice principles. The plan called for a reduction in waste facilities and truck traffic in overburdened communities and a reduction in overall waste processing. Unfortunately, Mogonker says that the plan has yet to be fully implemented. The groups continue to pressure city leaders to fulfill the promises that they made in 2006. Because as Kelly Terrius, resident of the South Bronx, told Transform Don't Trash, environmental justice around recycling and waste hauling is critical. It's not a matter of luxury for them. They don't have a choice. For them, the question is, can my child breathe? Can I breathe? Can we have a healthy, happy family here in the places we have to live? Environmental justice is not an option for the people who live in these bad places. Environmental justice is a necessity for their health, for their well-being, for their ability to do well, to truly do well in life. More from Joe Walsh, and then we'll be back.